Case 22-1345, LLC versus Scott McKay. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Ms. Mullen, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. Assistant Attorney General for State Elevator Inspector Scott McKay.
Okay. All right. I was thinking, is this criminal? No, go ahead.
No.
Thanks.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
This case is about a civil elevator inspector who was simply doing his job.
Right.
Sterling Hotel's dispute with the state of Michigan actually began back in November of 2018. At that point, the State Bureau of Construction Code sealed the hotel's elevators that were in operation.
They want backup power, right?
That's right.
They got the backup power. And then on the site, he comes up with a altogether new reason that nobody had ever heard about, and they lose the usage of their property in the hotels. That's kind of where we're at, right?
I'm going to go through the factual history and put some more.
I mean, there was no notice in advance of the actual, sealing of the elevators. There was no notice of this condition that the elevators must descend to the basement rather than the ground floor. Is that fair?
First.
As alleged.
Yeah, first, there was ample notice. And secondly, that's
of that? Based on the, so we're looking at the complaint. And any facts that are plausibly alleged in the complaint are true. Normally, we get these on a Rule 56 basis, but you folks have chosen to pursue it early, and that's fine. I guess that's fine. There may be some jurisdictional issues here, but so we must take the complaint, the facts alleged in the complaint as true. Okay. And where in the pleadings does it say that they actually had notice before that day when he shows up, that they had notice of this condition that the elevators must go to the basement for some reason where there are no exits during a fire, instead of to the ground floor, which is where ThyssenKrupp apparently had programmed them to go?
Okay.
Where in the record, what page would I find that notice that they had?
There's no specific notice that the elevator doors needed to open when it went to the basement, but that, if you look at the actual violations that were issued, that's not the basis that they failed the inspections on November 1 and November 5.
And this is based on the complaint?
Yes, attached the complaint. It's R107 and R108. So what happened is that the elevator board met on June in 2019 and said, these elevators, pursuant to this conditional variance from the code's requirements, they need to have these backup battery power devices installed. And they, five of them need to have that done within 3 months. The one that's non-operational has to have this done before it starts operating again. That three-month deadline came and went. Sterling did not comply. Sterling also didn't appeal the board's order. It could have sought judicial review.
Okay, but then they do comply with the battery part, right?
Well, not completely. So then the 3 months comes and goes. The board gets back together at September 2019 at that hearing. They have no update from Sterling, and so they decide to issue a written demand saying, Sterling Hotels, you have to comply with our June order. You have to alter these elevators, and that includes that they have to pass inspection and have permits, or we're going to seal these elevators.
Okay, and at this point, they need backup power. That's what that's all about.
Correct.
It's not just in any whim that comes into the inspector's head when he shows up that day you must comply with. I mean, that's not the notice. The notice is, we've been having this problem all along. You guys got to get the backup power.
If you look at the court's, if you look at the court's order and the written demand, it says that they have to pass inspection. And if you look at the elevator code,
but the question is whether they had notice of the specific reason, not just pass inspection, not that. The specific reason why they failed the inspection, why they won't let them use the elevators, which, according to the complaint, we're kind of stuck with the pleadings at this point.
Yeah.
According to the complaint, that reason is they don't go to the basement. Now, where in the pleadings does it say that they were told and they got to go down to the basement before Mr. McKay shows up that day?
So,
anywhere?
With
respect to the issue about the basement, if you actually look at the
No,
Your Honor, but that's
my question's about the pleadings. Where is that in the pleadings, yes or no?
In the pleadings, if you look at 10.7 and 10.8, it states the specific reasons the six elevators did not pass inspection.
Right, that's that day.
I want to clarify a misunderstanding here. Two of the elevators that were inspected on November 1, if you look at the violation orders, it's because they were not altered at all. So they were in violation of the code order, so those could not operate.
I don't mean to be contentious. I'm just trying to, you know,
the four,
as a matter of housekeeping, just get clear that they didn't have notice before Mr. McKay visited that day. That the elevators had to go to the basement, based on the pleadings, correct?
Correct, so but if you look at the reason he cited them for failing the inspection, it's not because they didn't go to
but
the basement.
But those came later, right?
Yes, if you look at the November 5th, so this is the four remaining elevators, their usage denials attached to the complaint, Mr. McKay inspected them and found that they did not comply with several requirements in the code. One of the most important considerations was that the door open button didn't work so that people could not exit the elevator.
You're talking about the faxed or otherwise provided unsigned claims of problems, right? But the day, I think the question has been about the day itself before at physically at the location, what was the reason given? The reason given was that they don't go to the basement. And then subsequent to that time, documents were received that were unsigned, is that not correct? That listed other improprieties that are then claimed at a later time to be the basis of the sealing of the elevators. Isn't that right?
I think that a state agency speaks through its written orders, and the written orders list the code provisions and the violations, including that the doors did not open and the emergency firefighter button didn't open.
But none of that was said at the time that the elevators were physically sealed. I think that's what we're trying to get to. At the time they were physically sealed, the statements were, there was one elevator that didn't pass, I'm sealing all four. And then at a later time, I think it was by fax, but please correct me if I'm wrong, or email, documents came that were not signed by this inspector that listed different violations. Is that wrong?
I'm not sure that a violation needs to be signed by...
That's not my question.
Am I wrong? You got to just answer the question.
Am I wrong with the time frame?
There is whether it's well-plugged or not, there's an allegation that Mr. McKay said that the elevators didn't open when they went to the basement. But the state, how it speaks through its written violation orders, those list the specific reasons, the code violations, why these elevators didn't pass inspection, and the board agreed. When the board met 1 month later in December, it said, Mr. McKay's right. Sterling Hotels, you have to alter these elevators. They have to be completely code compliant, and the doors need to open when you hit the button, and the emergency firefighter button
needs
to work.
Maybe the easier way to ask this question to get an answer is to say, when the four elevators were physically sealed, did Sterling Hotels have the information about the other claimed violations? That's a simple yes or no.
All we can accept is the allegation that he said they went to the elevator.
They went to the basement?
That they didn't go to the basement.
Okay, so that's what we have at the pleading stage. Okay. And that means they didn't hear about this thing before he tapes up the elevators. So they don't have notice in advance of the deprivation. And so that seems to be a problem for the due process claim.
I suppose, but... whatever the reason that Mr. McKay and the Bureau of Construction Code sealed the elevator, how were they supposed to know how the elevators would fail the inspection? In other words, how could the board, when it issued its June order saying these...
Well, you could have a code. I mean, if there were something, some regulatory code that's applicable here, where the state or whoever speaks through their orders says the elevators must always go to the basement, even if there's not an exit. They must go to the basement. And these folks, are on notice. They have to know what the code says. Did the code say that?
What the code says is that if you alter an elevator, it has to pass.
All right. Did the code say it always has to go to the basement is my question.
No, not that I'm aware.
Okay, so they didn't know about that, and their elevators get, sealed up as a result of that. And so it's just, this is sort of... not that complicated, partly because it's a pleading stage. They don't have notice of the reason why they couldn't use their elevators. And that basically makes out a due process claim. And that principle is so clear and straightforward, goes back to about 1215, that it does seem like qualified immunity, it's clearly established that, you know, you can't take away people's use of their property without giving them some heads up of the reason why. So, I mean,
I'm struggling with one other factual issue in this also, was that the statement was that if one elevator fails, they all fail. So the reason to fail three of the four elevators was that the first of the four elevators failed. So the statement was, I'm told to seal them all if one of them fails.
Yeah, that's a curious representation, because Sterling itself says McKay tested the four operational elevators recently equipped with backup batteries and determined that each inspected elevator failed to comply with the code.
But
that's what Sterling...
This is a 12B6 motion, so the choice to bring it at that stage rather than summary judgment means that you take as true all of the allegations of the complaint, right?
Yes, but Sterling itself is alleging that McKay tested all four elevators and determined that all four failed. And if you look at the documents attached to the complaint, they show that McKay tested all four operational elevators and all four failed.
How did they fail?
If you look at the...
What was the...
The usage denials, there's several things that are cited in them. One, as I mentioned, being that the door open button...
Is this on the day of that these...
This is for the November 5 inspection for Mr. McKay. So
these are documents that were provided to them after.
Yes, Mr. McKay didn't, you know, hand draft these on the spot. The Bureau prepared the violation notices and provided them to Sterling's counsel. So that's correct, Your Honor. And if you look at those usage denials for the four operational elevators, there's one for each elevator that matches their serial number, and they note for three of the elevators that the door open button didn't work so that occupants couldn't leave the elevator. They also note that there was an issue with the flashing signals, which you can see in the board's later order is clarified as the flashing fireman hat, the emergency button. They also note that there was no written procedures in place. So these are some of the code violations that are noted in the usage denials that were issued by the Bureau of Construction Codes.
And how long after the sealing up moment was that issuance?
I believe, I'll have to double check here, I believe it was within 24 hours of McKay's inspection on November 5. Notably, the first inspection of the two non-operational elevators was on November 1st. And then he came back and did the four other elevators on November 5. And the documents for all six elevators were provided to the council shortly after that November 5th inspection.
Okay, thank you. You'll have rebuttal. We'll hear from Mr. Kakari. All right. Kay Carley, very good.
Good morning. May it please the court. Hassan K. Carley on behalf of the plaintiff appellee, Sterling Hotels, LLC. Defendant appeals the decision of the district court to grant in part and deny in part defendant's 12B6 motion to dismiss plaintiff's complaint based on qualified immunity. And defendant's appeal raises two issues, essentially. First, whether plaintiff's complaint sufficiently alleged factual facts to demonstrate constitutional due process.
We know that.
Okay. And whether the district court properly refused, this is the important question, whether the district court properly refused to dismiss plaintiff's complaint on the factually intensive theory of qualified immunity before any discovery has occurred.
Well, and we take the facts, and, you know, it's all favorable to you right now. It only gets worse from here, usually.
Yeah.
So everything you say is true, and looking at those facts, would a person in Mr. McKay's position know pretty clearly from the existing law that his conduct either violated due process or would amount to a taking?
Yes, Your Honor, he should have. As you pointed out, due process is established for decades, if centuries possibly, and it's very clear to all inspectors what must occur before you issue a violation.
What about the state or the government has said that I guess 24 hours after the elevators get sealed up, you were told some additional reasons other than the basement thing. Is that an accurate characterization of the pleadings?
That plaintiff received those written notices following the inspection and the sealing of the elevators.
Yeah.
That is accurate.
And so what does that do to the notice issue? I mean, it's after the deprivation.
But yeah, it changes.
Well, what do you think?
It doesn't change anything. The Supreme Court has said that there must be timely notice of the before the deprivation. Mm-hmm. And in this case, it cannot be timely if it came after the deprivation. Mm-hmm. So it should have been clear to any inspector, especially a seasoned inspector by the state who does this regularly, that you cannot seal anything, any elevator, before there is written notice of the violation, when there is no imminent scary circumstance that requires an immediate sealing of the elevators.
So what should have happened?
What should have happened is that the state or McKay should have informed plaintiff before the inspection that, listen, if these elevators do not descend to the basement floor on our testing.
I'm talking about the other issues.
I'm sorry.
They now say that it wasn't because it didn't go to the basement, that there were these other problems. Now, they did say that you have to pass, you know, the permitting or whatever. So he goes out and he sees these other violations, which he couldn't have anticipated. What should have happened after he found them?
Okay. So these other violations you're talking about,
yes,
these other alleged violations, for example, the fire hat not turning on, the button light, that's what they're saying.
Well, also the door not opening.
Sure. So these are times when the inspector can say, this is a violation according to this rule, and we'll come back in a week and we'll reinspect to ensure that the light turns on or the door opens when it's called.
Why must they do that under the Constitution?
Because it provides the plaintiff notice of.
Okay, but kind of going back to what I said earlier, let's say in some code book somewhere it says the doors have to open when you push the button. I mean, the thing that's unique about the basement thing is it's probably not in a code book somewhere, is my guess. But these other things probably are. You're on notice of that, and if you fail one of those things, then you're sort of, you had notice and you didn't keep it in proper repair.
Right.
And so what do you do with that, given that supposedly you were told about those things 24 hours later?
Right. And discovery would show whether codes require sealing of an elevator when the door doesn't open or if the fire hat light doesn't turn on.
What the consequence would be.
Right. And we don't know because we haven't gotten to discovery.
I don't have it in front of me. What does the complaint say about these particulars? Do you know?
They came after the sealing of the elevator, and maybe some attorney at the state of Michigan thought, well, let me think of how we can justify our action. I don't know. We haven't gotten to discovery, Your Honor, but what we do know is that these actions and these notices were issued after the sealing and after shutting down 4 of the 5 floors of the hotel.
Yeah. On the takings thing, it seems to me you have a real tough road to hoe there. You have a regulatory takings claim. This is a very hard claim as a practical matter, not least because it's a 4-factor test. And so maybe that's why these sorts of claims don't get brought against individuals that often, because how do you defeat qualified immunity? How is it clear to Mr. McKay, pursuant to a 4-factor test from Penn Central, that those factors on these facts are going to balance out in a way that makes this just unequivocally a taking?
Well,
I don't, you know, unless you have another elevator case about basements or something, it's pretty hard to see how Mr. McKay would have had notice as to the putative regulatory taking.
Well, Your Honor.
And that goes to QI.
Yes. If I may respond to 2 points.
Sure.
First, related to qualified immunity, these arguments are, the Sixth Circuit prefers that these arguments be heard following the close of discovery because there's just not enough facts here.
No, but I don't. That doesn't make sense to me because it's whatever facts you allege. You know, it's kind of your world right now.
Sure.
And discovery, you know, unless you amend, you can't do better than what you've alleged.
Understood.
So let's say we are going to just look at what you alleged and see if he's entitled to QI.
Great. So the Penn Central factors are pretty intuitive. They're basically,
really?
Yes, I'll read them to you and
okay.
Let's just talk about them for a second.
Yeah.
The first factor is that the economic impact of the regulation, what the economic impact of the regulation is on the claimant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the shutdown.
Oh, pretty big deal.
Pretty big. Four floors gone on a hotel.
Temporary, but yeah, pretty big deal.
For as long as until the state says it's okay. And then the second factor, the extent to which the regulation has interfered with distinct investment-backed expectations. So the plaintiff here owns a hotel. They're expecting that they're going to be renting rooms to patrons, collecting revenue from those patrons, and covering operational costs and other things.
Yeah. They also know that they have to have the elevators in a certain condition. You know, that's part of the expectation, too.
And the expectation is also that if a light is not working in the elevator, that they're told about it without it being sealed from use and shutting down four floors.
What part of the complaint lets you find that fact?
Which fact? That?
That there's such an expectation on your part. I mean, where in the complaint? That's a pretty fact-intensive thing you just said.
Yeah.
That the way the world works is we get a week to fix the button. Where does that come from? Where is it in the complaint?
Well, the complaint says that there was this
factual assertion.
Yeah. And that there was, the only reason that was given was this failing to go down to the basement floor. We're addressing these later brought up arguments now without the benefit of discovery. So,
right. Well, why don't you do the other two factors?
Sure. And then for the Penn Central factors that I'm looking at, there's three of them that I'm looking at.
Okay, go to the third one.
Okay, and then the third one is the
fourth one.
Sure. And the character of the governmental action. And this is where you can consider whether the government was trying to keep patrons safe from harm, for example. And in this case, what McKay was actually doing was putting patrons in the most dangerous place at the most dangerous time. So the character of the governmental action is not supporting the takings here. And then those first two elements that we discussed, the economic impact and the extent to which the regulation has interfered, those are pretty significant. And again, all of these are, yes, wordy factors, but intuitive. What does the impact of McKay's action have on the hotel? Well, it means that they cannot rent at least 80%
of
the
rooms. His job is to shut down elevators that are dangerous.
Of course.
So, and that's what all these things are always going to be true. So there's always got to be a proviso, which is that, you know, as long as the elevator's safe.
Yeah.
The intuitive part is as long as it's safe. And the whole thing he does is say whether it's safe.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if he says, well, if he thinks, well, if I say it's not safe, then, you know, theoretically, it's not a taking.
If that were true, Your Honor, then the safest thing, according to McKay, would be to put patrons in the basement floor when there's a power outage or a fire. And that simply cannot be true. And in fact, ThyssenKrupp, the elevator manufacturer, disagreed with McKay. We had the hotel, obviously, employee disagreeing with McKay. They're looking out for their patrons. Even the city's fire marshal said, you know, Mr. McKay, I'm going to defer to whatever you think, but it does seem pretty dangerous to deposit patrons in an employee-only area. Maybe it's dark. They don't know where they're going. No exits. Can't get to a lobby. Can't get to the outside, you know. So, yes, of course, McKay is tasked with making sure the elevators are safe. McKay is not tasked with making elevators less safe, which is what he was doing here, according to the complaint.
Well, you argue about whether a regulatory taking claim can be maintained against an individual state officer. Why was the law clearly established at that time that sort of claim could be brought?
We cited a case, and as did the district court, showing that there have been cases where there has been at least a case where an individual was sued for a takings claim.
And is that Michigan Interlock, an unpublished decision?
Yes.
I'm struggling a little bit with that because that was a case that said that, well, he has standing to sue, but then found that he got qualified immunity on the very basis that we're talking about, that the law was not clearly established. What between that 2020 case and what's happening in this case would bring a different result on whether the law is clearly established?
Yeah, so the law is clearly established that an individual can have standing to be sued. What happened?
Standing, yes.
Yes. What happened in Michigan Interlock was they went into a very factual analysis before they determined that individual was eligible for qualified immunity, was protected by qualified immunity. Here, we don't have that factual analysis. We don't even have those facts that can remotely say that he is protected by qualified immunity when he is putting patrons in harm's way and shutting down 80% of a hotel. So there's standing for him to be sued, and if we can get around qualified immunity, then that's all we need.
Well, I think Judge Strange is asking a different question.
Okay.
For legal support for the proposition that, assuming you have standing and you've suffered an injury, and assuming that there's been a takings violation, can you sue an individual officer for that taking as opposed to suing the state?
Yeah. My understanding, if I'm understanding your question, both of your questions, Your Honors, Michigan Interlock allows for an individual to be sued for a takings claim. Then you get into whether that person is actually liable for the takings claim. So the first step is whether he can be sued, and the law is clear from our perspective that an individual can be sued for a takings claim violation. We now have to establish that he actually...
Okay, and you're saying the law is clear because of Interlock?
That's correct.
Do you have any other cases?
That's the case that I'm relying on at this time, Your Honor. If the court would...
So because you think that the court below was correct to say that we do not address qualified immunity at the pleading stage?
I'm really sorry, Your Honor.
Is your position on this that because we have standing, mm-hmm. and the district court was correct to say that we do not address qualified immunity at the pleading stage? If you can or we choose to address qualified immunity at the pleading stage, then where is the clearly established law that put this this regulator inspector on notice of his duty to you? Because that's not Michigan Interlock. In Michigan Interlock, they granted qualified immunity.
Right. Your Honor, we can just point to the facts, the cases we have cited in our brief to support that what Mr. McKay did, he should have known would have violated the takings clause. I see my time is up. We would rest on our brief for that particular, for your question on that, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions, Your Honors?
I don't think so.
Thank you, Your Honors.
For your argument, we'll hear thank rebuttal.
Thank you.
Hi, Your Honors. We did take a look at the violation notices that were issued on November 5, and they were issued at 5 p.m., so shortly after the inspection concluded, the Bureau of Construction Codes generated and completed the violation notices to include McKay's notes and issued them to Sterling. I want to address this position that counsel said that McKay should have, found the violations and said, I'll come back again in a week. But a reasonable person in his shoes would not have thought that's what he had to do, because the state statute allows for an inspector to seal elevators on the spot. The elevator code in the state of Michigan says that elevators cannot operate if they've been altered and they don't pass inspection. And the board order issued in June of 2019 and the board's demand letter in September of 2019 said if these elevators don't pass inspection, they have to be resealed. Because again, they were only conditionally opened.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Don't they allege that they never altered the elevator?
Two elevators, and just to be clear, in 2018, when the Bureau first sealed the elevators, the hotel went to the board and said, we want a variance, an exception from complying with the code. And the board said, okay, but you have to put in these backup battery devices.
No, I understand
yeah.
that. But I think plaintiff takes the position that they never altered these elevators to trigger any of this.
That I think where you're confused, Your Honor, is you're thinking back prior to 2018 when they were talking about the generators. So this fact pattern, we're now in 2019. So they've said, the board has said, look, you have to install these backup battery devices.
And they did.
In four of the elevators, not two of them.
Okay, but are you saying that if you have six elevators that were built into the building and two of them are not operable, that you can't use the other four? Just don't understand why we are talking about the other two.
Oh, because the board's order in June of 2019 said that all six had to be altered or they couldn't operate, and it gave a deadline. And so that's why McKay was even out there. This was pursuant to the board's order. The board ordered inspection. He was there to see if these six elevators had been altered by the deadline.
Okay, that seems a little bit arbitrary to me that if you do everything you're supposed to do for the four and you're not violating any sort of proportionality requirements, that you shut them all down, even the four that are operating, because there are two that they couldn't retrofit.
So the board's order in June of 2019 and its subsequent demand letter in September said they have to be altered and they have to pass final inspection. And that's what the elevator code says. Any elevator that's altered has to pass final inspection before it can be operated. So McKay was out there on the four altered elevators doing the inspection, and if they didn't pass that, they couldn't operate. And so the question is a reasonable elevator inspector armed with the knowledge of the board's order and the elevator code and the state statute, which is all valid, supposed to know that he has to say, no, we need another hearing, a third hearing.
So when you are talking about altered,
yeah,
you're not talking about some alleged removal of a generator, you're talking about the installation of the battery recall.
Yes, Your Honor, I'm sorry if I wasn't clear. When I say alteration, I mean the board ordered installation of the battery devices.
Okay.
And with this suggestion that the bases for the four elevators failing inspection were brought up later, I just think that's not accurate. The complaint itself attaches the violation orders and they list the code provisions, the titles of the provisions, and McKay's notes on why they failed. And if you look at the board's decision the month later, the board agrees with McKay. They say these have to be completely code compliant, and you have to fix these buttons that open the doors and the emergency firefighter hat button, or we're going to seal them again.
Okay.
That's what the board says. And
okay. Your time's up, so we'll take a look at the record on that point.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you for your arguments. Case will be submitted.